Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. It is week two of self-isolation and we are still doing our best here to stay indoors and keep ourselves away from everyone else outside. So we're here with Andrew Trimble. You're back in the box room.
I am, yes. I'm very excited about today's episode. It's a bumper edition. It's like Baz and Andrew Omnibus on a Sunday. It's like three episodes of EastEnders all squeezed into one.
Yeah, this is going to be a long show. We've got, for all of you that have been asking, where's Fla? We've got Fla back on the show. He's going to join us in a few minutes. We've also got an interview with Pat, who met up with Jack Carty last week, or at least talked to him over the phone. I also chatted to Rugby United New York's Mark O'Keefe last night to see how America is coping with the coronavirus. And then you've been doing some Penguin work.
Yes, I've hit it off with the Penguin online. I've been flirting with Sam for about a month now. And now it was time just to check out if I was getting catfished or not. But he doesn't disappoint.
Brilliant. All right. Well, look, I think we'll get him on to join us with our album and movie reviews. This week we have picked Luc Besson's thriller Leon and the best Smashing Pumpkins album they ever released. But before that, here's Fla joining us on the line from his housebound in Killaloe. Welcome back to the show, Jerry Flannery. Fla, it's been a few weeks. Things have changed massively. It's not quite Alien Overlords, which we've talked about before, but we are in very different circumstances now. How are you doing in lockdown?
Just getting fatter. Just getting considerably fatter.
A man with an insatiable appetite for busyness and food. So you're just busy making food and eating it.
Yeah. And I'm watching a lot of Netflix as well in the evening. So we were watching Goodfellas the other day and I realized that my day is like, you know, when they get put in jail in Goodfellas and they make the whole day around making dinner. So yesterday was fish pie. So I spent the whole day making fish pie and going through every fish pie recipe I could find on the internet. And then I did crushed up crisps on top of the mashed potato and grated cheese over that. It was pretty good. Had that with a salad yesterday. A couple of glasses of white wine. Yeah, I'm just getting fatter and fatter.
So what's your day like? Are you training? You just moved into a new house, so you've got a lot of work to do there, I presume.
It's just trying to keep routine for the kids more than anything. It's we get up, the kids are generally up around 7, so then we try and have breakfast at 8, and then we'll go with that Joe Wicks. He does those workouts and we do a workout with Joe Wicks then on YouTube at 9 o'clock after they've had their breakfast.
Sorry, I am not aware of that. That's some guy does a workout for kids.
Yeah, we were doing that as well.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff?
He just does like lunges and squats and burpees.
Spider-Man lunges.
Yeah.
Hit a lunge and then send your web.
Yeah. I remember thinking to myself, "Oh my God, is this what strength and conditioning training is now?" I was like, But it was good. So we do that with the kids, burns a bit of energy off, and then we're trying to keep routine for them, and then they'll have a snack then, like they would when they were at creche, and then we do some arts and crafts with them, painting or jigsaws and stuff like that, and then we're trying to just keep some sort of structure on the day.
So it's hard to, you're full on with the kids. It's hard to get any time for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Before lockdown, I was going into the pub and I was doing a bit of work in the pub, just painting and stuff like that. But that's done now. So I think it's just important for the kids that we just keep some sort of structure on the day, because it's easy to get up and do, you know, just float around. So we had a picnic yesterday, but it was freezing. We went down to the garden. Sandwiches and crisps, and we just had to sit there like myself and Katie freezing while the kids were running around.
Wow. Yeah, Trimby, you haven't gotten quite to full lockdown yet up there, have you?
Yeah, we are. I think we are. in pretty much full lockdown. I can't see how much more lockdown it can become. Everybody's, you're only allowed to work if you're a key worker. You're not allowed to drive for any other reason than going to get medical supplies, going to chemist, going to the doctor, or getting food. And you're allowed to exercise once a day.
Is there a radius on where you can go?
No, I think that's maybe the main difference between you guys. Two kilometers down there, isn't it? Down in the 1980s, it's 2 kilometers.
Yeah, and the physical distancing thing has gone to another level. I think we were right last week when we were saying the social distancing was kind of like a thing for people to do, where they were like, oh, let's go social distance. So they were going out to just stand close to each other, but not, you know, a few meters, whereas physical distancing and just staying the fuck away from people is seems to...
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see the effect that this will have on us all. If this goes on for a long period, if this goes on for 12, 16 weeks, I was at the co-op the other day and I walked down one aisle and then I saw this lady and we both turned and went back and we both ended up in the next aisle, looked at each other, rolled our eyes again. It was like we were playing Pac-Man and she was the bad guy. She was like this. I was like running from her, but trying to manipulate a course that would allow me to pick up the things that I needed. And then
cherries and the cakes.
What have you noticed? I've noticed that whenever you walk past people in the aisle, whenever you do have to kind of go past them, everybody wants to be polite. I think everybody's being very friendly, but their body language is saying something different. Everybody wants to kind of show some community spirit and some solidarity, but then you're also walking past each other and you're like not wanting to breathe or breathe in.
Just holding your breath. Yeah.
Everyone's like,
I was walking down the bank in UL the other day, my bank that I do the walks on, where the Hogweed journalist lives, and my mate's parents were cycling towards me, which I'd say they never cycle, but now that this is happening, they've decided to get their BMXs out and they go for cycles. So they were cycling towards me on the small path, and they waited till they were about 10 feet past me to then stop to social distance. Well, he did. Well, she did, but she didn't tell her husband. And then he cycled into the back of her and the two of them fell off their bikes. And like, they were both trapped underneath each other's bikes. And then I couldn't help them because of social distancing. So I was just standing there like, are you okay? And they're about 2 feet away from rolling into the river, which would have been unbelievable because the river is only a foot deep, like, so it wouldn't have been dangerous, but it would just have been the cream on the top of the cake, like, just to see the two of them drown like drowned rats. But yeah, and I was telling
Jack, just on the topic of cycling, Jack learned to ride a bike the other day, a young fella.
Oh, good man.
Yeah, coronavirus has been brilliant for that development, I suppose. We're looking for silver linings to the cloud of, you know.
Is that with stabilizers or what?
No stabilizers. And weirdly, been trying it with him all week, just half an hour every evening, kind of just running alongside him and just holding his shoulders and kind of pushing him, just giving him enough momentum. And then Anna came out and I'd been nervous about letting him go for any length of time, just let him go for a wee second, then hold on, let him go, trying to develop that confidence. And then Anna came out and goes, well, Jack, how are you getting on? And he just walked over, picked up his bike and took off on it by himself. It was class. He just took off down the hill, flying, no bother.
Good man, Jack.
Yeah, I know. It was a big moment in the Trimble household last week.
Yeah. Any developments? You, Flack, wrestling with the kids?
Just got a lot of energy, and Eli's been... they've just been a little bit aggressive, so just trying to make sure that they're getting their energy out so that they're not taking it out on each other or me. I got a kick in the head going to bed the other day, so it's just they're the same as us. They're just getting bored and just getting, I suppose, they just can't go in and make food for themselves all day, so that's somewhere I can do that. So otherwise, yeah, just get them to run around and just do loads of. We're going to have some unbelievable amount of, they're going to be like finger painting, jigsaws, puzzles, colouring in, all that stuff, man. And you think that stuff takes a long time, but it doesn't. Like, I'd be like, right, I'll do these jigsaws, that'll take an hour. And like within 15 minutes, they've got the jigsaws done. And I'm like, oh God, what's next? And then...
Yeah, I know. Have you had them on their iPads or phones, or are you trying to avoid that? Because we avoided that for the first few days, and then we realized they're long days. We need to just kill them. Like, they actually need a bit of chill out time. But Jack kind of gets wound up playing Angry Birds, so we always have to say to him before, Jack, it's Angry Birds, not Angry Jack. otherwise he just throws a tantrum at the end of every kind of 15 minute Angry Bird block. But we've had to bring in, we brought him a few like educational games on the iPad for like spelling and numbers and stuff like that, and he's actually getting into those, which is a little bit more healthy than Angry Birds.
Disney Plus is getting a good going in the house now.
Massively, yeah. Not if you watched in Disney Plus.
What shit, we're going through so much of them. Like, what do we watch? Moana, Tangled. We watched Beauty and the Beast the other day. We watched Monsters Inc. We watched Zootopia, was pretty good.
That is good, yeah.
Yeah, but just trying to keep, like you're saying, you're trying to spread it out, like not have them watching TV all day. So we just try and keep it, but there comes a time when you hit like maybe 3 o'clock when you're knackered, and you just try and give them some TV time, and then if you can get out, get some sort of fresh air, and then get them back in again.
Yeah, how do you find something? We've got to find something for ourselves in this. Like, it can't be just us hanging out with the kids all day, right? You got to do something that keeps, because this could go on for 2 months, or a couple of months anyway, where it's going to be maybe not as severe a lockdown, but. We've got to get some sort of proper routine. Have you any plans? Are you, is that the way you're thinking? That's definitely the way I'm thinking. Like, I need to get a couple hours every day where I'm doing some proper work.
I'm trying to train a little bit. But it's hard to get into a routine, because until we get the kids into a routine, then I kind of struggling a little bit. I tried to do your 100 press-ups in 4 minutes, Buzz.
How did you do?
Got to 81.
81. How did you break it up?
25, and then 15, and then 10, and then like all the way down to like twos and ones at the end.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to do it every day. Maybe by next week or the week after, I'll have got the 100.
Yeah, you'll get it after a few days. Good start. I think 20s, 15s, then 10s all the way should be grand.
Yeah.
Don't blow gas early.
Yeah. 4 minutes training every day. So yeah, you think the 25 in the first minute was too much?
Yeah, that extra 5 will blow you at the end, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy you, Fly. You doing much training?
Doing a bit. Yeah, doing a bit. Just, but like, I suppose running now is kind of, I went for a run this morning, but you can only run so far, so. Went for a run, then just doing press ups and swinging a kettlebell the odd bit, but it's not, you can't out train the amount of food I'm eating, so. But it makes me feel good anyway, and doing the Joe Wick stuff in the morning is good with the kids as well. Spider-Man lunges.
Yeah. Watching any rugby? I've watched a few classic games over the last few days. I think that could be something we should do, is maybe review a classic game over one of these weeks. I watched the All Blacks Ireland game, Chicago Trimby. It's a good game. Jesus, it's a good game. Played well. Well done. You were great.
Thank you. Thank you.
I also watched the All Blacks versus England in 1997. Which was a 27-all draw in Twickenham, and like New Zealand had Lomu and Cullen and Jeff Wilson and Mertens, and England
Matt Perry fullback for England.
Yes, I had completely forgotten he existed, and he was brilliant.
Yeah, and they would have had that little, what was it, they had a little winger as well. They had, what was his name? He used to play for Sale. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name as well. He was good. He was up against Lomu, like, and he managed him all day. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
England were like 23-5 up, and like it's amazing because it was obviously just at the turn of professionalism, so the standards were so crap at certain parts of the game, like the defence, they were still just racing, like one guy just sprinting out of the line, and it was like the no one had coached them defence, the strength and conditioning wasn't great, lads weren't in brilliant shape, there wasn't a huge amount of organisation, even the way they passed the ball just seems so laboured, but fuck, it was a good game, man.
Was it still that era where players naively thought, like, if their hips told the defender one thing,
yeah,
that the defender would fall for that? Was that was probably was just about the end of that, was it?
Loads of dummies, like,
and they were never just showing the ball. They were always a full dummy, windmill dummy.
Ian Jones was playing second row for New Zealand and threw a few beautiful dummies like a basketball player. Austin Healy was playing in the wing for England, had a few good dummies. Greenwood was a...
Baz, did Richard Cockerell have a thing with the Kiwi hooker before the Haka for that game, I think?
I missed the start of it, man. I didn't see the Haka.
I think they might have had like some sort of Barney beforehand. Yeah, I remember the game.
Such a little thug. His collar came up to here, like. Frank Bunce and Walter Little in the centre for New Zealand were phenomenal, man. Good times. I'd recommend watching stuff like that. It was really good.
Where would you get that?
It's on Sky Sports. I'd say you'd find it on YouTube. YouTube is loads of those kind of games.
Yeah.
Munster also, the Munster Supporters Club are also picking their top 15 Munster team in the professional era. Have you seen that, Fla?
I voted for you, Baz.
I did not.
It's on Twitter. You voted for me, Trimby.
You pushed your numbers up nicely on Twitter. Per Mullins.
It's a bit shameful.
Mike Mullins. It was a little bit shameful.
Come on. It was because Tupoki had like 90% of the votes and the rest of us were just like, looked so crap. So I got a few of the Penguins on board to vote for me and I got bumped up to a respectable 20-something percent.
Oh, I think you were even higher than that whenever I saw it. You weren't that far off Tupoki. And it was a two-horse race whenever I saw it. Maybe it dropped a little bit. Maybe people came to their senses and started voting the other direction.
But
who was 15?
15 was Zeebs, actually.
Yeah.
They put him in against Sean Payne and Dennis Hurley, I think, maybe, or maybe Felix. Felix, I think. Zeebs kind of, I think he came out 90% on top. Dougie on the other wing, again, landslide. Tupoki at 13. I think I might just get in on the bench. I don't think they're picking a bench, but I'm going for it. Maths, I think, came in 12. Halstead was up there. It was a neck and neck race for the two of them, but I think Maths came in as 12. Earlsey on the left wing. They didn't even give any opposition for Raj. They just said a lot of different moments that Raj had in his career, like the drop goal against Northampton, the kick against Leicester. Was it over there? And he's kicked
to
win it.
Yeah.
Which I funnily enough, do you remember that game, Flan?
Injured.
I was playing that day. If it's the right one where he kicked, where Donica scored.
Man, Donica ran from halfway.
Yeah. I think you were playing that game, were you?
I was, yeah. I came back. That was one of my first games back after breaking my leg. And I was, I think Andy Goode had a kick to win it after Raj maybe. And I was under the post and there was silence in the crowd. Like you could hear a pin drop. And one of my mates, Garv, Kyle Garvey, who is now the video analyst for Australia's rugby senior team, he shouted out at the top of his lungs, loud noises. Do you remember that from a brick from loud noises? And there was fucking war, people like screaming, a boob. Andy Goode had to reset himself with the kick and missed it. And we won the game. It was phenomenal. But then I think tomorrow, who it's up for scrum half today. So every day, Flather, picking a player. So they've only had scrum half today, so between Murray, Strings, and Tomas.
Mm, that'd be an interesting one.
Mm. I think the back row is where it'll get pretty interesting.
Mm.
Foley, Leamy, Quinny, Wally, Peter Manny.
Jim Williams,
CJ, yeah. I'd say you'll make it.
I probably have to compete with Woody, man. I'd say you'd have to give Woody that.
Yeah, I forgot about Woody. Oh well, you achieved more in the Munster jersey.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We'll give you that one.
Okay, take it.
Yeah. You watching any other rugby?
No, I literally don't have any time at all during the day, apart from when we put the kids to bed. Put the kids to bed, half eight, we might come up. Like half the time we've been going to bed really early as well. Is anyone else doing that, like going to bed really early?
Yeah, I'm going to bed pretty early. I don't know how, Barry, I don't know how you're getting through so much stuff. You sent through into the group that you'd read that book that Cooney was talking about, Silence is the Key. Did you just read that off the back end? Mentioning it on Monday.
Yeah, well, I've listened to it on Audible. So I walked the kids for 2 hours. It's 7 hours long on Audible. So I got through it pretty quick. It's absolutely
7 hour walk, and the kids are like gone.
Oh, gee, distended bellies.
Yeah, well, over 3 days. It's very good. It's bizarrely appropriate for the time we're living in, because it's called Stillness is the Key, Flat. It's Ryan Holiday. Cooney was telling us about it last week that he's reading it. And it's basically about taking a bit of a pause or a sus and just calming down and not filling your life with just busyness or being a busy fool. It's kind of going for walks, having solid routine, just taking time to spend time in your own and think a lot. And yeah, it's very powerful. Highly recommend it. Because I think there's opportunities for us to do stuff like that now that we don't have to be anywhere or you know, is that, you know, there's a lot of people saying that this, obviously, there's the main thing is there's a lot of people going to get sick and a lot of people are going to die. But the, you know, there's some positives that might come from the fact that life is going to slow down, and we're all going to have a little bit more perspective on life.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I've been more busy since things have since the lockdown, just with the kids, and I want to get. As Vlad was saying earlier on, I want to hopefully get them into a routine that they kind of, not that they look after themselves, but they become a little bit more, maybe Jack and Molly become a little bit more dependent on each other, and then they can kind of play together independently of us. And then we'll get time to read or be a bit more, I don't know, just a bit more time to ourselves maybe. But I feel exhausted. I'm knackered all the time because the kids are so busy at the minute.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, I can't really relate. I can't relate to it too much in that our kids don't do anything yet. They're just lying on the floor, so it's different, I suppose. But yeah, anyway, it's a good book. But I've done loads, watched loads of TV. Have you watched much on Netflix?
I started watching that Tiger King last night.
Oh yeah. Yes,
pretty insane.
It's one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my god, man. Carol Baskin. Craziness, man.
How many episodes are you in?
I fell asleep last night at the stage where we found out that Carol Baskin's ex-husband went missing, and he was a millionaire, and we were like, what?
Yeah. Definitely killed him. Definitely fed him to the tigers. Trinity, this is one of the best TV shows I've seen in ever. It's some guy just, I think the guy who made it fly, he's just, he went to interview or look into how many big cat sanctuaries there are in the States. He kind of was intrigued by how many exotic wild cats are living in people's fucking garages and stuff in the States. And or actually he goes initially to look at some guy's snake, and then some fella comes in to look to buy the snake, and he goes, oh, I've got a snow leopard in my car. And they go out and they look at the snow leopard, and then your man just starts this documentary and starts going to these different tiger sanctuaries, and it's the craziest people on the planet. It's like the crazy part of America in a nutshell. Kind of like the way Making a Murderer unfolded in front of your eyes. Like, this guy must have been what he's making. I mean, it's over about 8 or 9 years he makes it. The guy, the main guy's name is, what's his name again? Joe Exotic. He's got this blonde mullet and loads of piercings, and yeah, it's...
He's got two husbands.
Yeah.
Joe Exotic seems like he would be a contemporary of Tico Loco.
Loco Tico,
sorry.
Which was, we just found out, was the name of Vlad's character in a movie that he made himself back in, when was that? 2006?
No, man. No, before that.
Before that. Called Paface, which was a film about Colombian drug lords that had moved to Limerick, I believe.
Loosely based on a true story, Fla?
Nothing to do with me, man. go and find some of your own material, lads, to pad this out.
I think we'll find that video somewhere. It's pretty brilliant. With some rugby players playing drug lords in Limerick. I loved it. All right, so I think we'll wrap this up, boys. Get back to your day of eating and watching Netflix.
Joe Wicks.
I'm going to try it. It might be the next step from trying to do 100 press-ups. How long does it take? Does it take more than 4 minutes?
Nah, it's 20 minutes, man. 20 minutes.
All right. Not too bad. All right, lads. Happy lockdown.
Nice one.
Okay. Good to talk to some adults. See you, lads.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
All right, great to have Fla back on the show. And also, last week, producer Pat was lucky enough to catch up with a very big friend of the show, Mr. Jack Carty. Pat and Jack were talking about the campaign Tackle Your Feelings. I'm Taking Control. And to be fair, Jack spoke very well about the pressures of social media and, you know, the pressures that weigh heavily on him as a rugby player. So let's have a listen to that. We'll have a chat afterwards.
Where you hold up at the moment yourself? Where's your?
I'm in Galway. I went back to the loan last week just to have an isolation chat with my parents, through the window even. So I was chatting to them last week, and then I've been in Galway since. I think it's tougher as well for some of my parents at home. My sister only lives up the road with her two kids, so their grandchildren are there. In fact, they kind of, you know, my parents have kind of had to stay away from the grandchildren as well. It's something that you probably take for granted in some respects, that they're only able to kind of have conversations with them through like a window or something like that. And then it was my godson and nephew's birthday last week, so we all did like a face call over the phone with him. So it was strange. He didn't have a clue, obviously, what was going on, but it was different. So,
do you know other people in terms of like family and friends who are kind of involved in the kind of fight that's going on, or working in hospitals and doing the day to day stuff?
Yeah. So, my mum would be a healthcare worker, well, she was. So, I think she may have to, in the future, probably get to, like, if she's put her name. It was, I know that was Answer Ireland's caller. It was some sort of initiative from the government to try to get some senior staff back. So she, I think she probably would get tested to clear that, so she can go on and work probably. So she'll probably be doing that soon. But no, I've no other immediate family members who are kind of working as doctors or nurses at the moment. You know, it's to see some of the people and the kind of sacrifice that they've been doing is phenomenal. So you have to raise your hat, like the stuff that they're doing for the country and the sacrifice they're making to you know, ultimately save people's lives is quite heroic.
In your own head, do you reckon that there might be a way of just kind of that, or this season could almost be in danger? Like, they might just wrap it up for like maybe semis and finals if they have to. Do you think that might be the way it plays out?
Yeah, it's, you don't really know how it's going to go. Like, I know from us, like, we're obviously stood down for 8 weeks, so that'll what bring us up to like May-ish or that. And you know, with the way kind of messaging has been around it, it seems it's going to be probably that, and maybe a bit longer. So I'm sure whatever decision they will make, it'll be something that will be in the best interest of, I suppose, players and fans' well-being. Yeah, I'd say at this moment in time, you're probably not going to be looking at games till July, August. And if it's not then you'll wonder, will they probably just have to kind of scrap the whole season?
Well, let's say we all get out of our houses again the next, let's say, give it a month. But what type of Jack Carty is going to emerge in the next month? Jacked?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever been jacked. I don't think I ever will be. But yeah, hopefully I will be in a lot better physical shape. And I look forward to, I suppose, seeing my family again, and probably all the things that I probably took for granted. I'll certainly be looking forward to kind of being around friends and family again. I suppose just getting out and the simple things, having coffee, and as I said, seeing family, seeing my nephew and niece again. So earlier on in my career, first thing I would have done probably after majority games would have been looking on Twitter and trying to, I suppose, seek validation online for how my performance was. And I probably didn't seek it internally from coaches and from players. I did the exact opposite of what people probably say to do, and it was on Twitter straight away, search my name. And you know, that was all well and good when I played well, but I suppose at an earlier part of my career, I would have spoken to you about it numerous times before. That consistency that I probably had last year wasn't there. So one week I'd be top of the world, and then the next week if I played poorly, you know, that would like regurgitate through my whole week, and reverberate through my whole week, and my whole Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday would have been, you know, I would have been down the dumps because of what people said about me online. And then I suppose the instance that was shared in the video was just you know, it was one particular individual that probably shared a series of stuff over Facebook for a period of time. And, you know, I obviously came across it, and it was probably an unhealthy thing that I was doing at the time, but I was screenshotting them, and I kind of had a folder on my phone. And at times I probably used that as, I thought I was using it as motivation, but probably the impact that that was having on me as a person probably wasn't healthy, and probably led me to, you know, in some respects, getting down on myself. So, yeah, I had that for a period of time. And I remember at a function, which in the video, it shows that I bumped into this person, and they said, "Oh, hiya, Jack." And I knew this person's name, so I said hi to that person. And I said, I kind of like always envisaged what I'd say to the person when I met them. And then when I met them, I was like, didn't really know what to say. So I was like, you haven't really wrote anything about me this year, or you're not writing anything about me this year. And he was like, that's because you're playing well. And then that was it. And he came across as such a nice person. And everything that I had built up in my head about what this person was like, you know, was, if I could go back and kind of use the tools that I use now in terms of you know, when I was feeling down, to speak to friends, speak to family, use the Tackle Your Feelings app, and then to not be going kind of searching for validation online and looking for what people thought of me, kind of just to what my close circle thought of me, what my teammates, what my coach thought of my performance, and ultimately detaching whatever emotion that I had, whether I played a phenomenal game and got man of the match, or where I played a poor game and was subbed after 60 minutes, I tried to just, you know, go about the same way after the game, and how I lead into the following week as I would, whether it was good or bad.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
All right, good stuff, Jack, and thank you, producer Pat. Trimby, do you ever feel any effects of social media? I think we might have talked about this before briefly, but you know, it's becoming ever more you know, prevalent, where people are getting a little bit lippy online, and it can get quite personal. Did you ever experience anything like that?
Yeah, it's a big thing at the minute, isn't it? Obviously, with everything that happened with Caroline Flack outside of rugby, and then inside of rugby, obviously, pundits and supporters, everybody out there has an opinion now with social media. So it's kind of frightening how quickly that can have a big impact on someone's life. I think that's someone a good example.
Someone like Jack, who's the nicest fella you'd ever meet, and just loves playing ball, and such a positive, happy guy. Doesn't, like, when we came on the show with us last year, I just found him just such a nice, normal guy who loved sport and wanted to get on with it and just play and enjoy himself. And, like, I feel sorry for him that he's having to, having to go through that, but it'd make him stronger, you'd imagine, wouldn't it? And
yeah, I think his approach, I find that interesting. I think he said, maybe Pat will correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think he said he took screen grabs and then just saved them in a folder. Is that right? Mm. Because that seems unhealthy, and for probably most people that is unhealthy. I know Raj, I don't think he didn't do that, obviously, but I know he was always aware of who was saying what about him and who he wanted to prove wrong, and he used that as ammunition. So it's not always negative. I think overwhelmingly the majority of the time it will be negative, but there are some people like Raj. Another one is Tom Court. I remember Tom Court used to get massively motivated. I just remember one time whenever he wasn't getting picked for Ireland, and then we were playing away to Dragons, and Tom was so fired up, he went over, he scored the worst try of all time. And then because he was so psyched up, he went like a shh to the crowd. but what he didn't realize,
so
was
out of character.
What he didn't realize was that was the disabled section. He was just like shushing all the disabled people in the crowd.
Wow.
But he was really annoyed because Kidney wasn't picking him at the time, not because disabled people in Newport were giving him a hard time. So anyway, Tom used that as motivation, and we always got the best out of Tom whenever he was fired up or he felt like he had a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I think Rod, you know, maybe plays like that as well. He maybe played better whenever he had something to prove. I know he always read everything that was out there. So it's not always that, but I think most of the time, if you read stuff, it's going to sit in here and have an effect that you don't want it to have. And obviously, that's what Jack experienced.
Yeah, in that book, actually, stillness is the key that Cooney was talking about. He talks about Michael Jordan, and when he, I think maybe he won, or he may have been put into the Hall of Fame or something like that, and he'd achieved everything that is possible to achieve at that point. And he got up on the podium and went on a 20-minute rant, including all the people that had abused him or that had put him down throughout his career or didn't pick him and stuff like that. And it sounded absolutely insane, but it was kind of an indication of how much he used that stuff to fuel him and to fuel, you know, him becoming one of the best athletes of all time. So I think you need to go whole hog, right? If you're going to do that and use those things, you need to be like, right, this is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm never going to let it get me down. But you have to be a particular type of person, an obsessed type of person to do that.
I prefer to just not know about that stuff and get on with it, you know.
Yeah, I know. I think most people, that's going to weigh heavily no matter what. It might be used as extra motivation occasionally, but generally that's going to weigh heavily, and you're going to hold on to something and carry something around that isn't really that healthy. I think generally that's the case. There are one or two people who can do it. Michael Jordan, Tom Court, and O'Gara, I think, of the three. Similar. I'd like to see those three go out for coffee. I'd like to be a fly on the wall and hear that conversation.
All right. Well, next up, we have former St. Michael's and Lansdowne winger Mark O'Keefe, who is currently playing his rugby in Major League Rugby in America with Rugby United New York. I caught up with him last night to talk to him about what is going on in New York City at the moment in lockdown and how that's affecting him. So we're going to play that for you now.
Mark O'Keefe, how are we doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Thanks. You're joining us today from New York City, which, look, there's no sugarcoating it. One of the most densely populated cities on the planet, and has now over 60,000 infected people with COVID-19. While we're used to seeing New York City as city doesn't sleep, mad, bustling, you know, never stops. How is it on a day like today?
Yeah, it's pretty grim, to be honest. It's dead. Everywhere you go is dead. We just moved out of the city. We moved to Staten Island. So
we can see the
skyline from our porch. It's actually a pretty good view, but it just seems like the whole city is completely dead. The subway is empty. Streets are empty, but it's not all doom and gloom. It's been pretty good weather the last few days. So we've been standing outside and stuff and tanning. So it's not the worst.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were in the city up until the last couple of days?
Yeah, living in Harlem. So it was a bit of a reality check moving from Dublin to Harlem last year. But it was good, though. It's completely different to home. But no, it was a good experience.
City. And was the reason to get out of there, like, are you renting a house? Is it an Airbnb or something you're in now to just get you out of the more populated city or what?
No, so obviously it's great that when we came over, we get housing provided. So we used to have a house in Harlem, but we moved all of our training regime to Staten Island. So you have pitch, gym, physio, everything that we need on Staten Island. So our owner just got us a house on Staten Island. It's actually kind of different. It's good that we have a house instead of an apartment. So like we have a back garden, a front garden, a basement, and three floors. So it's pretty good. It's more like home out here.
But. Okay. So, but the New York City is in lockdown officially for the last couple of days or the last week. Is there a sense of panic over there, do you reckon, or what's the general vibe around the city?
Yeah, I think it's like every single morning we wake up and we all reconvene in the sitting room and we just slick on the news. It seems like every single day it gets worse, and because of the serious, like the vast majority of the vast people that live in New York City, it seems like every single time Trump talks or the governor or the mayor of New York talks, it seems like the severity is getting worse and worse. Every single day there's more deaths. Every single day there's more cases. It's probably a really bad thing to listen to them sometimes. And sometimes it's better just to stay indoors and go about your normal day.
So sense that they haven't handled it as well as they probably should have.
I don't think so, but it looks at, I guess, obviously Irish mammy, my mum's on to me a lot. It seems like Ireland have done quite well in terms of like locking down the place. I know it's on full lockdown now. You can't go anywhere for 2 kilometers, but it seems like over here, I know last week it was sunny as well. And there was a lot of people in parks. People were kind of feeling like it's just a holiday. It was like a really long bank holiday or something. Like they get the days off work. But no, I think now the severity of it is going to hit here a lot quicker than they think.
Yeah. And so you're in a house now. Is it four or five of the other players from your team or who is it?
So we actually, all of the Irish have gone home, bar me and Will Leonard. Right. From Limerick. So we've been living together for the last 2 years. And then there's another player from South Carolina, Alex McDonald, here. So it's just us three left in the city that aren't from New York City. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy times.
Was that a decision? Like, did you decide to, no, I'm going to stick this out? Or are you still considering coming home?
I'm still considering coming home, definitely. I actually had flights to come home tomorrow. We were supposed to have our bye week starting tomorrow. So I was actually going to go home and surprise my mum, but they got cancelled. I was actually flying from New York to Paris, Paris to Dublin with Air France, but they cancelled all those flights, so not coming that one.
Okay, so you'd sit it out for a while yet?
Yeah, sit it out for a bit. I mean, I'm just sitting and I'd be doing the exact same I'd be doing at home here. So it's not too bad. I've good company. We're just doing home workouts, eating food, watching movies, typical of what you'd be doing at home. So, and it's just kind of nice to be, it's kind of nice to be away sometimes, but now I'm kind of getting to a realization that I might have to hit the road soon.
Really? So, but the, correct me if I'm wrong, I think New York have looked after you in terms of contracts. You'll be safe for next year and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's great. To be honest, I have a good few friends that are playing in Europe and stuff, and it's a bit of panic over there. Whereas I think because this league is growing, it's not there yet, but I think it's safe. Like all of our contracts were safe this year, which is great. It made it life a lot easier. And they obviously didn't. We were obviously given housing and stuff, so we're allowed to stay here. Like they're not kicking us out, obviously. But it was just kind of a shock to the whole coronavirus was a shock to our league just because it was so new, but they can guarantee that it's back next year according to my owner, so hopefully we can keep going with it.
Okay, so yeah, take us back. You're apart from all this happening, you must be loving it, living in New York City, professional rugby player. Yeah. It's a pretty dream situation to be in at your age, I presume.
Yeah, no, it was like when it all first started, I was just finished. I finished a degree and finished a master's, and I had the opportunity to do, like, I was going to do a grad visa. So a lot of my friends would have done a grad visa to New York City, and our old general manager, James English, who actually used to teach in BlackRock, was the general manager of Rooney and just got on to me. And I had the opportunity to come here, like to play professional rugby in the biggest city in the world was just too big to turn down. So it was great. It was an easy but tough decision. It wasn't so clear cut in my mind. I had a lot of stuff at home as well. So, but it was definitely a very good decision just for anyone of a young age, like myself playing AIL rugby. I was playing with Lansdowne. We just won the AIL. And I was just, it was a no brainer to move to New York in general. And then the fact that I could play professional rugby, housing, just looked after, it was just amazing. So.
Yeah. And you'd played Leinster 19s, right? And then Connacht 20s, as you said, very successful Lansdowne AIL team. Yeah. So you were in and around a pretty professional setup and coming from a school like St. Michael's as well with that crew of internationals that have come out of there. Like a lot of those lads, I presume, were in your year.
Yeah, there was actually, it's funny. So when I was in school, my head coach now, Greg McWilliams, was a teacher at Michael's. Which is hilarious. And a coach, which is hilarious. And then played Leinster 19s. Turns out he was the coach of Leinster 19s. And then went up to Connacht, played Connacht 20s. It was great. It was a great opportunity. Just good to get out of Dublin for a small bit as well. I was coming from living at home, playing for St. Michael's for 13 years, playing for Lansdowne. It was just a really good opportunity. I had spent the whole summer up in Galway. It was as professional as you get because I was living in a place with rugby players, eating with a place where rugby players, training with a place where rugby players, doing everything together. So it was a good opportunity to play like a professional at the age of 19. So it was good.
Mm. And then getting to New York then, are you full-time professional rugby player? Have you gotten involved in anything outside of it?
So it's pretty basically full-time. There is people with my visa, we're not allowed work. So it's a P1 visa, so you're not allowed work. So we do have a lot of downtime because a lot of people, like a couple of New York natives work jobs as well. So we, this year, our training regime was start gym at 2:30, gym till about 4:00, straight on to contact and skills. Then we have meetings, food, and then onto the pitch. But we'd go from about 2:30 till about 9:00, and you get home at 10:00. So it's a bit of a different situation in terms of we didn't do anything in the morning because we allow people to get their jobs done in the morning. Yeah. But a lot of us would check into the physios and the doctors and stuff before that. So it's a full on day, but just in a different situation, kind of weird.
And that setup is in Staten Island, is it, or is that in Manhattan?
Yeah. So this year we moved everything to Staten Island, to Wagner College. So it was actually great and it was brilliant. We actually had a canteen. So it was, I think it was $11 all you can eat, which is amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
So every single day at 5:30, all these college kids would be sitting down and 30 to 40 rugby players would run in and just eat every single piece of food. It was great.
Keep the weight piled on. Yeah, I know it well. Yeah.
They had chocolate milk on tap, so we were all happy at that.
Love it. And then what's the day-to-day living in New York like? You know, is it party central a little bit as well? Is there, you know, are you constantly out seeing the sights, doing loads of touristy stuff, doing loads of, I mean, I presume there's gigs and something on every night of the week over there.
Yeah, to be honest, last year was a lot more hectic. Obviously, I was 24 when I moved over. I'm still 25, I'm still young, but I was new to New York, went out a good bit. But this year we've been completely level headed, to be honest, as a team. Like last year we did very well, but we still enjoyed ourselves. This year we were quite level headed with everything we did. And I did all the sites last year as well. Anytime you had anyone over, you had to do Statue of Liberty, you had to do the Wall Street, the Bull, everything. So it was more like living here this year rather than last year. It was almost, I kind of felt like I was on a 6-month holiday.
Okay, yeah.
Which is pretty extreme.
Yeah, absolutely. And how are you enjoying the rugby now? Are you playing some good stuff?
Yeah, like before the league got cancelled, which was awful, we were playing pretty good rugby. We were actually building into it a lot. I know I missed a couple of games. I actually had shin splints and problems with my calf, so I didn't actually play the first two games, I think it was, but we were building into it as a team and we were actually getting better and better. It was just kind of annoying the way it ended all, but obviously safety first. We were actually just building up to our first home game, which would have been great, but
okay. Sure enough. And a lot of traveling all over the country as well, I presume.
Yeah, that's honestly one of the best things about the whole league. Like I'd never, from Dublin, if you're going on a holiday, like people would think about going to New York. People think maybe about going to San Diego, but I'd never really think of getting on a plane and heading to Austin or New Orleans or Houston. Where else do we play? Colorado. When I had the opportunity to do that last year and this year again, it was great just to see all these different places that you wouldn't go.
Wow. Yeah. And then Matthew Bastereau, I suppose, can't avoid asking you about him and Ben Foden, two huge signings for you. How have they settled in?
Yeah, so Fodes last year, to be honest, when I was moving over, I didn't really know what to expect because obviously there was so much about him. Like, he's such a character and he's such a big name player back in the day. And I remember seeing him play when I was younger and I thought he was great. I kind of thought there was going to be a bit of cockiness about him. But as soon as I arrived last year, he's honestly been amazing. He's been a great lad. He'd always be the first one to text you. And even throughout the summer, he stayed here throughout the summer. We went to Vegas. After we lost the semi-final, the 10 of us, we went to Vegas after that. That was great. He was there. Through the summer, went out with him, just met him for coffee, met him for food. He was actually he's a top lad, to be honest. Like, I wouldn't have thought it when I first came over how nice he would have been to everybody, but he's one of the stalwarts of the group. And then...
Do you say that to him like, geez, I thought you'd have been a dickhead.
I actually did. I'm pretty sure after a couple of pints on a night out, I've said that to him before, yeah. And he laughed.
Yeah, Trimby gets that all the time with us. Andrew Trimby's like, I thought he'd be shit crack, but he's actually good crack.
Yeah.
One of those ones. And how about Bastereau? How's he fitting in?
So again, when I came over, I thought similar buzz. Obviously, it's quite hard with him because English isn't his first language. So the first few training sessions were quite tough. And again, I think, no disrespect to Fodes, but Bastereau is still Matthew Bastereau. You know, Fodes was coming towards the end of his career. Bastereau, I'm pretty sure, is going back to Lyon now for 2 years, or Toulon, one or the other, for two more seasons. Mm. But he still was very much in the rugby world, and he came over and first training session, you're just like, oh my God, he's an absolute mountain. He was so good.
He enjoyed the all-you-can-eat, I'm sure, in the canteen. Yeah,
to be honest, I was shocked. I was shocked he had a way better diet than most of us, which I was shocked at, to be honest. I don't know how. I wouldn't be the best at dieting now. I'm very much pizza and chocolate milk, which is good. But he get away with it for a while. But no, he grew into it. He was actually, and he was very fond of the Irish lads.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so we got along very well with each other.
Okay, so is there any indication as to, you know, if things will slow down, when you might get back to training properly, or is it just sit and wait?
It's kind of sit and wait at the moment. I know the whole league is finished, so there's no rush to get back to training. We've been given home workouts and fitness plans to do as much as we possibly can, and I'm surprised we're actually adhering to it. We're doing a lot here. Me and Will and Alex are doing a lot in the house, but...
How are you in isolation? Are you happy enough to be kind of chilling out and doing your own thing? Or are you a guy who's full of energy and needs to be busy?
Yeah, I kind of need to be busy, to be honest. I'm kind of losing my head. It's kind of the polar opposite. It's funny because Will is Will Leonard, he's literally sits on the couch and he's like, this is me done for the day. I'm happy as Larry. Once he gets his home workout in and his food provided, he's happy out. So, and then I'm just running around the house. I don't know what to do with myself, but that's grand. It's kind of nice to get a little bit of a break, but I probably need to do something quite soon.
do something. Any recommendations for us in terms of Netflix or films or anything?
Just finished The Outsider. Unbelievable.
I've seen it. Very good. Right?
Crazy, to be honest.
I watched that last week. Yeah, I've kind of done everything, man. So we're desperately trying to get some insight, we review things on this show now. If you listen in when this goes up, we kind of take it and show it to review. That's how little we have to talk about. But
it's tough in this stages. But watch The Outsider was good, and then I'm going to start rewatch The Wire. The Wire is class. So I'm
good, man. Yeah, I like your heads up. There's also one called Tiger King, which is an American show. Watch that.
It's about to start. Yeah, apparently it's all the new rave.
Yeah, that's what I imagine when you're living in America. That's what you're up to.
Yeah.
Get a job in a big cat sanctuary, man, if it all crumbles down with the rugby. Look, we'll leave you back to it, man. Thanks a million for getting in and joining us on the line. Best of luck in isolation. Look after yourself. And if you come home, give us a shout.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks very much.
All right. Cheers, Mark.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
All right. In these times of quarantine and self-isolation and staying at home for the greater good and the benefit of us all, myself and Trimby have been getting down and dirty with watching all our favourite films of all time, listening to some of our favourite albums. And thank you so much to all of you who have recommended some certain albums or films for us to watch. This week, we have chosen two of our favourite from a certain period, and that was 1994-95. Film is Leon, the Professional, and the album is Melancholy and the Intimate Sadness by the Smashing Pumpkins. Trimby, we've also decided to give a quick review of Disney Plus in the meantime, which we've been diving into as well. So I can't wait. But Trimby, you've been keeping an eye on our penguins and making sure they're okay over the last few days. What's the latest?
I have. We've been concerned about our penguins. Obviously, it's mainly genuine concern with, an additional side concern with our numbers going down, but mainly concern for the penguins themselves. So we've got a positive update on John Great Calverto, brackets fake name. He tested positive for COVID-19 over in London, but tells us his fever has started to go down after 5 days. He's feeling a lot better. Best wishes to John and his wife. We have another sick penguin. Sick in the head. Sam Brown, he was our inaugural Penguin of the Week for obviously giving Bernard Jackman and Murray Kinsella a hard time. Sam tested positive a couple of weeks ago, and now I think the plot thickens as he may have passed it on to his fiance, but we'll get Sam on the line and he can he can tell us about his symptoms or what's going on, will we?
Yes, wonderful.
Hey, Sam, how are you doing? How are
you on? I'm very well, thanks, lads. Much better.
Tell us about it. Tell us about the symptoms. What happened?
So I was at my fiance's pregnant, and we live together in East London, and we just come back from the midwife, I guess, about 10 days ago now, and I was like, oh, I feel a bit crap, so I went for a nap, and then woke up about 3 hours later, white as a sheet, and had a fever, and then got the whole sort of sore chest and cough, you know, all the sort of textbook symptoms, and it was that classic kind of like. Coming from quite a not particularly sympathetic home, you don't really want to go, I've got it. So I sort of tried to style it out for a while, but then I got a fever and was just like, oh, shite, I think this is the thing. So I had the symptoms bad enough for 3 or 4 days. The fever kind of came and went, and then managed fortunately to pass it on to my fiance. So I think I'm entirely better at this point, and I think she's over the worst of it as well.
Oh, she great. That's first concern, obviously. You're secondary.
She's back up to nagging me incessantly and eating 2 to 3 Easter eggs a day, which I think is a first sign of recovery.
So in comparison to a regular flu, did it feel different? I suppose that's always the first thing that pops into my head.
So because I'm sort of young and ish, like 35 and supposedly healthy. It's not like we're not the ones who are massively at risk from this. So it was like, it did feel different. It was like, I've had worse flus before, you know, it wasn't like I was snotty or blowing my nose or anything. It was just like this really annoying dry cough and this fever 3 or 4 times a day, but not like mad fever, you know, it was only like temperature of 100, that sort of thing. And it was like, it was very treatable by paracetamol. There was one day where I was feeling very, I think it was just the day before my birthday, I was feeling very sorry for myself. And, oh yeah, that's right, I'm not 35 anymore, I'm 36. The coronavirus stole my birthday. there was one day where I was a bit worried and I called 111. But no, I've just got steadily better since then. But it's made me, you know, we're very lucky, like we're both young and healthy and what have you. Obviously, there's the added worry about the wee baby on the way, but that doesn't seem to have been any complications so far. But like, I've got loads of friends and family and people with like elderly relatives and people who've, you know, got weakened immune systems and things. And I know it is a really, really hard time for them right now.
So was the same then for your fiance, same symptoms, and it was no more severe or no more difficult then with her being pregnant?
Irritatingly, she had it way milder than me. She was just like, I don't know what you're making such a big fuss about. it was the classic kind of man flu thing. I was like, she just shook it off and got back to being annoyed about being 6 months pregnant in no time flat.
Okay. I was going to ask when you're due, so that's even another few months left before...
Solstice baby, we girl due on around the solstice.
Lovely. And is that your first kid?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brilliant. Big step. So.
Yeah. Like, I'm really excited. I don't think I've thought through the I haven't read the small print on all this thing, but like, you've had twins and you still look fine.
I'm grand. It's easy, man. Yeah. I'm not a bother. Yeah, one will be Jesus. You wouldn't even know what it is.
And Trimble's got loads.
I can't even remember how many. Is that it was three last day. Last I heard, I've got three. Yeah. Sam, do you have any idea where you caught it? Because there's one theory going on there that did you get the letter from Boris Johnson that he's been licking the envelopes?
But there's been as I'm sure you guys have seen, there's been all kinds of mad hysteria kind of going around, you know, all sorts of crazy theories about it coming from 5G or, you know, it's plot or what have you. You know, the reality is I live in East London and there's a lot of metal surfaces, a lot of windows, a lot of doors. And, you know, but before this all kicked off, I didn't even think about all the things you touch in a day, you know. Getting on the underground is just like a big petri dish. So I now have, I literally, when I go out for my shops now, I have my, my workers' gloves, my... My Bane mask from The Dark Knight Rises, which, my sort of my ISIS buff, and I've got a big sheepskin coat that makes me look like I'm huge. So I don't know. It's nobody bothers me because I look like a lunatic. So social distancing hasn't been an issue so far.
Have you considered? So has your behavior changed since you've got it? Because obviously you're inclined to think you're probably immune now. So is it, you know, can you get away with more now?
Well, I've got a few of my really good mates are doctors, you know, and I sort of check in with them, you know, and they're the guys who are having a really, really shit time at the minute, you know, working nights, and they're bringing thousands of people out of retirement, and, you know, they're having to set up, you know, whole big wards of palliative care and things. And so I chat to them as much as I can, and I'm really kind of trying to be mindful and trying not to get complacent, because, you know, to the best of my knowledge, I've had it. To the best of our knowledge, that means I should be immune. But because it's a new virus, nobody knows. You know, it hasn't been studied yet. We don't know if it lies dormant, you know. So it's, I think, better safe than sorry is the only way to go, you know. And, you know, the idea of kind of getting a bit cowboy about it and then infecting somebody else, I think is, you know, that's terrifying. So I'm hunkered down for the long haul. I'm gonna, the aim's to finish Netflix.
Complete it. Did you, so with doctor friends, then you're obviously, you have more of an appreciation of kind of what guys in the front line are going through. Did you do the clap outside your door at 8 p.m. last Thursday? Barry, I don't know if you guys do this down south. I think it might be a UK thing. You did?
No, we did.
It was, did you do some?
I did do the clap, and I felt it was lovely, and I had goose pimples. And I felt great. And then I saw a tweet the next day from someone in Germany that said, in Germany, we appreciate our health service by paying them properly. And that sort of put it in perspective. <a little bit.
laughs> Pay them in claps here.
Man, I fell for them because I was, myself and Barry were talking about this. It's quite an emotional time, and I felt a bit cheesy and a bit dorky going to the door at 8 o'clock, and I was kind of looking out to see if any of the other neighbors were going to be doing it as well. I didn't want to be the only one opening up the door, and everybody was clapping away, and it was a lovely, lovely community spirit, lovely moment, and quite emotional. But I feel like there's a lot of stuff going on at the minute, and I feel more emotional in general. And it feels like, so we're talking about movies, everybody's watching Netflix, everybody's watching Disney Plus. It feels like, you know, the way on flights, people are inclined to get more emotional because you kind of feel slightly more vulnerable on a flight. I remember Tommy Bo telling me how he was bawling his eyes out on his way home from Vegas watching Marley and Me. We've all been there. To be fair, that movie would make you cry the best of time, but I watched, we'll maybe get into it now, our reviews, Barry, will we?
I think why you get so emotional on a plane as well is because it's something to do with the oxygen. I don't think it's that you feel more vulnerable because you're...
Oh, you don't feel like you might die, so you may as well die?
I think in my case also it's usually because on long haul flights I'm fairly smashed, which I think makes me more inclined to get emotional. I was flying to West Africa once for a job, and I was sitting next to this like huge Ghanaian lady, and I made the terrible mistake of putting the movie Up on, you know, the Pixar one. And I was just inconsolable for the whole start to finish. And by the end, she was just cuddling me. and going, "Oh, so much. Will you be okay?"
Yeah, I've had a few of those, man. It's I watched Les Mis on the last flight I was on, and I was bawling, crying as well. So it happens. But did you get a chance to watch Leon over the few days, lads?
Yeah. Go on, Sam. Give it your thoughts.
I watched the director's cut version, the French one, which is like longer, and it's apparently. It's a little bit more intergenerationally challenging, put it that way, but yes. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant.
Do you know why that is? It's because the director, Luc Bichon, right? His wife is the girl who's at the start of it. Do you know the girl I think she's a prostitute in the first opening scene.
With the fat guy.
That's his wife in real life, right? And they met when she was 12 and he was 29. They were family friends. But at 15, she declared that she loved him. And then they obviously didn't get together for years. And then they got together when she was an adult. And that's where he got the idea. Isn't that fucking mental? So
it was the least favorite bit of the movie. Just the general kind of dressing up and those two, that relationship. There was about half an hour in the middle of the movie where Gary Oldman was nowhere to be seen, and it was crap. And you realize how reliant, like the first half an hour, maybe 20 minutes, half an hour, and then the last 20 minutes were incredible because Gary Oldman was in every scene and he was unbelievable. And then you realise how reliant the whole movie was on him. And whenever he's missing, it's crap and boring.
So true fact from my friend Tom, which I found out this morning, because we did like a sort of little mini viewing party in London, and we're sort of texting each other the whole way through. Apparently Gary Oldman ad-libbed, you know, the whole "do you like Beethoven" thing, you know, the bit where he comes through the curtain, all that stuff. Apparently he ad-libbed that whole thing.
Wow.
And like, it was proper like,
yeah, when he does the crack of the neck thing in the bathroom as well, when he creeps up on her and he pops a pill and he does this crack of the neck thing, and he's a bit over the top at times, but I'm like, I don't care, because it's an action film, but it's artistic, right? So you're like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, he's earned the right to be over the top, same as in True Romance. He can do whatever he likes, frankly, as long as he's an arch villain.
Yeah, he appeared in our last two films. There's obviously a connection there. But yeah, I agree with Trimby. I first started watching, I actually turned it off at the part where they were dressing up and stuff. And but when I got stuck back into it, yeah, it's a phenomenal film, to be fair.
So. He was ahead of his time as well. I think he had those kind of John Lennon. Well, obviously that's after his time. He had the John Lennon glasses, and he kind of had the loose jeans, like short jeans, and he was showing his white socks. It's kind of a bit of a 20s hipster vibe.
It's a trend now. Yeah, it's like the modern capital, and those dads are dressing like that.
I'm thinking this is going to be my new grocery shopping outfit moving forward.
I'm bored of it. So, Jesus.
Little hat, John Lennon glasses, and then loads of grenades under my trench coat. And my trench coat.
Very good. To see someone coughing, just throw a grenade at them. Yeah. Hopefully it won't get to that. What about Smashing Pumpkins? Are you a fan?
No.
No, Trimby, you take this. You take this one. This is your.
I am a big fan. I certainly was when I was a youngster. I was a big fan of the Smashing Pumpkins. Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness is just such a strange move for a band that had a little bit of momentum, and then they just kind of rolled the dice with a double album. I read a little bit on them. On how the album was recorded, and it sounds like everybody else in the band hated Billy Corgan, basically, because he kind of ruled the roost, and he recorded all the bass parts and all the guitar parts and everything for Siamese Dream, I think, and then Darcy Retzky and James Iha, they wanted kind of a little bit more to do, I suppose, to contribute a little bit more to the double album. It was inspired by the Beatles, the White Album, which is a tough act to follow, to be fair. And then their recording process, there was just this factory, and they had like two different studios running alongside each other, apparently. So they churned out like 58 songs, I think. Only 28 made it into Melancholy. And then they were 30. Like
28.
Yeah, 28 songs.
And he produced it himself, right?
He did. He co-produced it, Flood, Summon Flood. They moved away from Butch Vig. Who else did Butch Vig do any other? I think there's a couple other big ones anyway. But he got ditched, and then they co-produced it with this guy, this new guy. But we loved
it. What's your favorite song on it?
I'd say probably Tonight. It's the big one, or maybe Zero. Bullets with Butterfly Wings.
I listen back, and it wouldn't be one that I would regularly listen to. Like, I was into Nirvana, I was into, Soundgarden and Sonic Youth and all that crowd. I was into Smashing Pumpkins, but when I listen back to it, I just got all these flooding memories of songs. And Muzzle, I think, is my favorite song on it. Mm-hmm. Absolute thing. And I read up on it as well, and he's such a creative motherfucker. Like, he wanted the album to represent day and night, so he wanted the first side to be day and the second one to be night, and you can kind of get that sense of it throughout it. And it was a smash, like such a risk to take, but it ended up being their most successful album.
Yeah, it kind of paid off, didn't it? But but yeah, I'm interested in the dynamics of the whole thing, because he was obviously, as you say, so talented, but he was obviously pretty pretentious. Even the name of the album, Twilight to Starlight, Dawn to Dusk, for the disc one, disc two, he was obviously pretty pretentious and kind of thought he was a bit of a smart arse. And I just imagine the rest of the band were like, this guy's a dick. Let's do our own bits instead.
Sam, you weren't into them at all, no? But you're from our same neck of the woods. So what were you listening to back then?
So I whatever part, I'm from a really musical family, you know, like pianos and all those instruments and things. And I don't know if I was dropped as a baby or what happened, but it's just that part of my brain is just entirely missing. We did like a little online pub quiz the other day, a couple of days ago, with some friends, and I had an unassailable lead. Like, I was absolutely coasting, like Usain Bolt coasting in the lead, and then the music came and I just fucked it, and I came second, and my fiance made me sleep in the spare room because she said she wouldn't date losers.
She didn't make you sleep in the spare room when you had the virus, but you lost the quiz that she made you sleep. I love it.
She's got, principles.
We want to finish on, because we've watched so much Disney Plus, I want to recommend to people that if they're at home, you can get Disney Plus free for a week and try it. It's incredible. I've watched kind of full season of The Simpsons over the weekend. But me and Trimby were talking about, Sam, I don't know if you've seen many of the reimagined Disney films, aka The Lion King, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, The Jungle Book. Have you seen many of them?
Bits of. Like, I was sort of very in love with the original. Like, I loved The Lion King. Gaston from Beauty and the Beast is my favorite character of, I think, in cinema, arguably. Maybe second to one of Gary Oldman's villains. His song is the one thing I would sing confidently. I don't know how I feel about the sort of the new live action ones. Are they good?
The Beauty and the Beast one is brilliant, and Gaston is unbelievable in it. I can't remember his name, the actor that plays him, but he like, for me, the key to getting it right with these films is getting the balance of moving away from the original to do something, you know, that's unique and putting your own stamp on it, but then obviously representing and staying true to the meaning of the film and so on. The Lion King was a fucking joke in my eyes, because they just tried to do exactly what the original was and just put the same similar style characters in there and tried to make the same film, not changing it a bit. Like, every single scene is the same, and it's just crap. Whereas the Beauty and the Beast, because there's animation and there's people and there's really good actors in it. I think they've got it nailed, and you can sense that everyone believed in that one. Aladdin, a little bit similar. The Jungle Book, then, Trimby, have you seen that?
I just watched it last night and this morning. Loved it. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it was great. Although the first 10 or 15 minutes, I felt like I was watching Homeward Bound. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Where the dogs are chewing to make it look like they're talking.
Yeah. So I felt like that. It took me a wee little while to get used to it. After 15 minutes, it kind of I got lost in the scene whenever the Shere Khan comes down to the waterhole under the treaty and kind of gets all threatening and all. Then I got into it then. But The Lion King, so I haven't seen the remake of The Lion King based on your recommendation not to watch it. So I haven't seen that, but I sat down with Jack and Molly to watch the original Lion King, and they were glued to it. So they've watched the original Jungle Book, the Little Mermaid and The Lion King this week, all the originals, and they were glued to The Lion King, especially Jack. He was transfixed, like you couldn't get his attention when he was watching it. It was amazing to see. And then we had a moment. So Sam, my two youngest, Katie, the newborn, well, eight months, and then Molly's three. Molly torments Katie, like tortures her. After watching The Lion King, right? So Katie's starting to get, she's on her knees, she's kind of like climbing up on things a little bit. There was a moment, it was a reenactment of Scar and Mufasa, and Katie's climbed up, she's on the sofa like this, and then Molly has this moment, she's like, I could fuck you off into the wilderness here. I was going, oh my goodness, our lives are going to become like Disney movies over the next 6 months if we continue.
What
just to
say that, long live the king, and he throws it.
So I saw it coming, managed to save Katie, but there's been numerous occasions where I didn't get there in time. But that's how that dynamic's shaping up at the minute.
Love it. Yeah, well, my favorite of the four is, or the five, is Jungle Book. Have you seen it, Sam?
Is Christopher Walken King Louis, or did I make that up?
Yes. What brilliant example of that film is that it tells the story kind of differently, and then it uses brilliant actors that are so different to the original voice actors that would have done it. So King Louis was kind of this happy Egypt in the original. He was like, "Way, I'm an ape." Whereas Christopher Walken, he's just playing Christopher Walken as a gorilla. And he's
just like, yeah, a great liar.
Yeah. To go into that. And then what's her name is Scarlett Johansson is Ka the Snake, and she's brilliant. And Bill Murray, who's my favorite actor of all time, I think, is Baloo the Bear. And he just he's just himself, and he nails it. So if anyone hasn't seen it, get out there and watch it. It's brilliant. Sam, you're going to be our Penguin of the Week again, man.
Right, as we've got time on our hands, can I actually have the Penguin now, Trimble? Maybe disinfect it.
We don't know where the Penguin is, Sam. We haven't a clue.
You have to make your own Penguin. You've time in your hands. Come on. Yeah. We should all do that.
I was so proud when that was announced, and I told my fiance, and she thinks rugby's stupid, and she's no idea who any of you are. And so it took a lot of context and explanation to get to the punchline that I was really excited about. And then she was just like, "You're an idiot." But it still meant a lot.
Well, it means a lot to us too, and we just want to say thanks a million for coming on and joining us, man. You've been brilliant.
My pleasure.
Thanks.
Delighted to hear. Things keeping me sane at the moment.
We will. And best of luck over the next few months as well, man, with the new arrival. I hope it all goes well.
Cheers.
Thanks. Yeah, all right. Well, look, we're gonna wrap up the end of the show with you on here, man. So look, cheers to everyone else that's helped with the show, to all our incredible crew in Dublin and around the country who have been doing this from their own kitchen, to Dermot, to Paul, to Anthony, and to producer Pat. Thanks a million to everyone that's tuned in and listening or watching. Sound, hope lockdown is going well. Look after yourselves. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe Together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
Party on, Sam.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe, Together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.